Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. Tonight's event is presented for your sobriety pleasure. And now, let's get ready for recovery! In the tradition of keeping it simple, this sober member wanted no introduction. But now, with all their earnestness, at your command, will you welcome, please, from Visalia, California, Holden!
What an introduction. Way to go, Mark. Thanks. My name is Holden. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome anybody here that might be a newcomer. I'd like to welcome anybody here that might be visiting with us. I'd like to welcome the people with the court cards. And I'd like to welcome you to the process of the insanity of recovery. My sober date is 2/13/89. I got sober coming down to the Alano Club when it was on Birch Street. I started drinking when I was about in sixth grade is when I started doing it kind of on a regular basis. You know, I might have had a drink or two of alcohol before I was in sixth grade by sitting on somebody's lap or around a family member or something, you know. But I in sixth grade is when all my stuff started, you know, when we started partying. And either sneak it out of somebody's house or go get somebody's sister or brother to buy it for us. And we would go out onto the school yards, like COS or the high schools or something, out in the, where the baseball diamonds were, and that's where we would drink. And when I started drinking, it changed my psyche. It changed my maturity level. And it made me more mature, but it made me immature, you know. And I started doing outside issues with it. You know, this is my story. I'm going to keep it to alcohol, but I did. I was duly addicted, so I did both the things, you know what I mean? And I partied through junior high and high school. And prior to my partying stuff, I played Pop Warner football. I used to mow lawns. I had paper routes and did that kind of stuff, like what normal kids do, whatever that is. But once I started drinking and partying, I quit doing all that stuff. And I wanted to be cool. I wanted to act like somebody I wasn't. And it led to me doing the wrong kind of thing when I was growing up. And all the trouble I got into when I was in junior high or high school was all behind drinking and doing the stuff I was supposed to be doing. And when I was in high school, I ended up, I got a Harley. I had a brother that was in the Harleys, and he ended up committing suicide. He lived in Fresno, and I inherited a motorcycle he had. And I went on this mission to build this motorcycle. And so when I was a senior, it was a three-wheeler. And so when I started going out on the weekends instead of going out doing what normal kids do, I started hanging around with the bikers on the weekends. And go out to Mooney's Grove, where I'd end up riding around with them, and we'd end up out of the outskirts towns in the bars. And even though I was only 16 or 17 years old, if I was hanging out with them people, like, they usually would serve me, you know what I mean? And I was fortunate that I graduated from Mount Whitney. I didn't have to go to continuation, because a lot of the kids that I went to school with got in a lot more trouble than I did, and they ended up going to continuation. And when I was 18, I graduated from juvenile hall to going to jail. I used to live across the street over here and on Rinaldi Street, and one of the things my brother used to do, he used to steal Harleys, and in my mind, when I get drunk, I wanted to be one of them bikers who stole Harleys. And so one time I got drunk with my neighbor, and we went and stole somebody's Harley over here, and they ended up putting me in jail. And And it was kind of a rude awakening going from juvenile hall going to the county jail, you know. And one of the things it taught me that I didn't want to be in jail, you know, and I think that's what they teach you when they put you in jail, that there's a lesson to be learned. And some people learn the lesson, some people don't. And fortunately, I didn't want to go back to jail no more. I drank until I was 23 years old, and I was hanging out at a bar one night, and there was a girl fight, and a guy jumped in the girl fight, and I pulled this guy off, and what happened is he stabbed me. He stabbed me in the heart, and it scared me so bad that I knew that if I didn't quit drinking, that I was going to commit murder, and I know if I commit murder, I was going to go to prison, and I didn't want to go to prison, but I don't like jail. And I had a son that was just born then, and I felt like God gave me another chance to live and to be a father to my son. And I quit drinking. I just white knuckled it up, but I kept using in my outside issues. I just like to smoke some little left-handed cigarettes, and I took them little white pills, you know. I did that for another 8 years before I got to recovery, and even though I quit drinking, I still did a lot of stupid stuff because I wasn't sober, you know. I wish I would have found AA back then, and maybe I would have had a better chance to grow up a little bit sooner. And what happened at the end of my partying is I had a girlfriend that I lived with, and she used to drink and used to use, and I was using when I was with her, and her dad was a football coach at COS, and he put her in the ARC in Clovis is what it was. It was an alcohol recovery center, and that was my introduction to recovery. And I went up there a couple times to see her on the visiting day or the family day, whatever it is, and she got sober for about 90 days, and then she relapsed, and my team thinking was, I knew she was coming down to AA, and I thought, you know, I want to come down here and figure out what's going on. And my thought was, I'm going to learn how to control her better. And I figured that sooner or later she was going to come back, and we were going to live it happily ever after, and with the white picket fence and all that stuff in the fairy tale land, you know. What happened is she never came back, and I got the gift of recovery. And, you know, it's God's way of tricking me or guiding me down here. You know, I want to give myself the credit, but it wasn't me that thought this, you know. You know, God's got a plan for me, and he's got a plan for every one of you, you know. And I don't know if I would have had a court card if I would have got it, you know, by being forced to do it, but court cards really do work, because I see it happen a lot with people. But I ended up sticking this deal out, and I, you know, and what they taught me to do when I first got here was to get a sponsor, to work the steps, and go to meetings on a regular basis, and they used to pound the table, and they used to intimidate you, to hold the big book up, and say to work the steps or die. And out of self-defense, I got a sponsor, and I got a big book, and I did the deal. And I got into service early on. This is one of the things I didn't know when I got into it, but when I first came in, Johnny Mack was here, and Jack Carr was here, and they got me into doing service work. And, you know, they say that people that get into service work early on have far greater chance of staying sober than the people that don't. And it was a blessing that I got into it early on. What I learned here is what my parents, my grandma, and my mom tried to teach me when I was growing up, or my stepdad, you know, was to be honest, don't steal, do the right thing, and be respectable to yourself and to the society, you know. And I never did know that, because I was the black sheep of the family, and I got in a lot of trouble, and I was real fortunate that I never got any drunk driving, because although I got public intoxications, and what I learned how to do here is grow up, you know. And it takes a long time to grow up here. It takes a long time to come to, you know. I heard this said when I first got in recovery is we have adult bodies and we have little kid emotions. Because when we start drinking and using, we stun our maturity growth. And I really believe that, because that's the way I felt when I got here. Sometimes I still feel like that today. I've been able to become the man I always wanted to be. I've been able to start my life over. I've been able to start my business over. I've been able to have a wonderful life. You know, I've always believed in God. When I was a little kid, my mom used to make me go to Sunday school, and I used to hate it. But, you know, what I learned was the Lord's Prayer, you know. So when I come in here and I used to hear the Lord's Prayer, it made me feel comfortable, you know. And I knew how to pray because I used to get on my hands and knees, and not my hands and knees, but on my knees. Anyway, I learned how to pray, and I felt comfortable with praying, you know what I mean? And I still do that today. I get up in the morning and I read the meditation book. That's another thing I learned how to do, is reading the meditation in the books in the morning and pray every day, and that's what I do. I've been blessed, you know. I've been blessed with a wonderful life. I've had some really good times here, and I've had some really hard times, you know. And I got married here, I got divorced here, I've had my heart broken here, and no matter what, I haven't had to drink, you know. And I just went through a surgery, and I really had a hard time with that because I got an infection, and it really put me down for the count. That I didn't have to drink over that either, and you know, I've been blessed, and so can you. And I love recovery, and I love the life I have today. And I hope that you can find just a little bit of what I found here. And I found a way out, and so can you. And that's all I got. Thanks.
A winner by knockout, Holden. She's a longtime member whose AA motto is to be of service. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Visalia, Diana.
Thank you. Diane, alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 21st, 1999. My home group is the Women's Amity Group on Tuesday night at 7 p.m. And that is one of the groups that is close to my heart. One of the things I was taught here is to always remember my first and my last drunk. And my very first drunk that I can remember is I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I was on the way back to Oklahoma to visit my dad. And I was laying in sitting in the back seat drinking rum and coke. And I remember my family giving me that, so I, you know, calm down and go to sleep. And it didn't do that for me. It fired me up. And I love that feeling. I also remember laying across my mom's lap and vomiting outside the car door. That was really nasty. And, I was raised on alcohol. My family, the only person in my family that did not drink was my grandma. Everybody in my family drank. I was raised around alcohol, so I did not ever learn how to live life sober. So growing up, by the time I was a teenager, unlike Holton, I was thrown in continuation school. I did not go to school. I would not go to school. I wanted to sit home and drink and get drunk and smoke cigarettes and do whatever I wanted to do. By the time I was 21, I ended up joining I joined the California Conservation Corps. I thought if I got into that, I would, not have to drink so much. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I wasn't ready to quit. I celebrated my 21st birthday in there. I did about a month, went through the training, came home, got drunk, never went back. I got my first DUI in 1983. I was coming down 99, and somebody in a Volkswagen called CHP on their TV and said I was swerving. So that was my first experience in Bob Wiley's. I wasn't in Bob Wiley's. I got the road camp for the women when they had that out there. So I spent 14 days out there. I drank 24/7. I don't think ever was sober unless I didn't have money, and then usually I found it somewhere. I ended up
I lost my train of thought. I ended up, you know, drinking and everything. So I guess 1992, a very distinct started happening. And my mom passed away from this disease. She drank herself to death. She was drunk for like 14 days straight. She would not eat. And not too long after that, 11 months later, my father passed away from this disease. He died from a heart attack that was a result of alcoholism. So in 1993, I got sober. I didn't have a choice, actually. My mom and my dad were my biggest enablers. They took care of me. I didn't have to take care of myself. So in 1993, I got sober. I had to sign up for disability to become an alcoholic addict. So I signed up for that. One of the conditions was I had to go to this outpatient program, and I had to have a payee. So I said, well, I'll make my sister my payee. You know, she'll be my payee. She'll cash my check, give me all my money, and I can go do what the hell I want to do. And so I ended up, made my sister my payee, cashed my check. She gave me just a little bit of it. And I went and partied with my friends. And so she gets pissed off at me, and she threw me out, kicked me out. So all my money, I was pissed off at her. And so that was my resentment. And anyhow, I ended up making my Christian buddy my piggy after I got rid of my sister. And she'd cash my check, give me my money, and then we'd run back and forth to Sacramento and do all this stuff. And so I don't know, 1993, I finally said, you know, enough's enough. I can't do this anymore. And I was up in Sacramento, and I was dating with some guy that I met on the river. I actually took him to a friend's house, my best friend's house, in front of her kids, and that was a pool. You know, and anyhow, I ended up calling my oldest brother, Bobby. And I told him, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I need help. And I don't know why I called him, because I was always terrified of him. He scared the shit out of me for some reason. But I called him up, and he said, Diane, you're welcome to come stay with me. You just can't drink whiskey, because I'm a whiskey drinker. I love whiskey. And so I could drink beer. So I ended up moving in with my brother and his wife, and I stayed there for a couple of weeks. And my niece, I made her my payee. My niece is a lot older than what, you know, I'm not that old. My brother's, there's like 10 years difference from us. And so I made my niece my payee. She goes, Aunt Diane, she goes, you're an adult. You get your own place, you take care of yourself. I'll give you the money, but you pay your own bills. I'm not going to do it for you. So I ended up getting sober for the first time in 93. And I used to come to the Alana Cup every day. I'd get here late. I'd leave early. Didn't get to know any of you guys. I ended up signing up for college at COS. And met this guy. Ended up in one of my classes, and he took me to a meeting out there at 264 on a Tuesday night. And when I got there, it was all men. I found out he said to the men's that meeting, so. I ended up selling my birthday there at that meeting, my 3-year birthday. I never celebrated a birthday. I never got a chip. 3 years sober, and he made me get a 3-year chip. So I got this 3-year chip. And never went back to meeting again. I hate talking in front of people. I do not like doing that. So I quit going to meetings, and, you know, I ended up getting a job at Walmart. Started working at Walmart. Worked my way up to support manager back in automotive. Couldn't go to school because I had to start paying bills because they kicked me out of Social Security because I was doing so good. The reason I was doing so good is because I was doing the outpatient treatment at King's Youth Substance Abuse, and after I graduated out of there, I was so scared that I might get drunk again because I volunteered there to do some other services, so for my internship at COS. So that's one of the things that helped keep me sober for 5 years, because I did stay sober 5 years. my niece and her two little boys ended up moving out here from Oklahoma, and she moved in with me because her husband got a divorce, and we helped each other out financially. And a series of things started happening, and my sister-in-law, who I love absolutely dearly, she has been part of my life ever since I was a little kid, passed away. She had diabetes. And not too long after that, my brother, Don, he was like my other very best neighbor. I got a lot of neighbors. And when he found out that his wife passed away, he couldn't deal with it. He bent himself to death. And for me, I didn't know how to deal with that pain. I did not know how to deal with life on that way. And I think I just jumped ahead of myself, because when I was living with my niece, and somebody said this the other night, it reminded me of it. I used to drink NyQuil, a cap, every night. Every night I would drink a cap. Well, my niece, and Diana, I think they're addicted to it. And I don't know, it's for the aches and the pains and all that stuff. So actually, that 6 years that I was supposed to be sober, I wasn't really sober because I was taking that NyQuil every night. And when my brother Don passed away, and I ended up relapsing because I did not know how to not drink and with these feelings that I had going on, because I was never taught how to feel, you know, and how to deal with those feelings. And so I ended up, and this time I'm a support manager at Walmart, and I called my boss up and I go, you know, Janet, this is what's going on. My brother died and I'm drunk. She knew I was an alcoholic. So I went on this 3-week run. And I call it my God experience, because God got me here. I ended up in this bed for 3 weeks. I could not function. I could not eat. My other brother, Kurt, moved here to take care of me and help me with the finances, because my niece moved out when she found out I was drunk. She didn't want her boys around me. So my other brother came in from Missouri, and he came to stay with me to help me with the finances. And, you know, he would bring me a shot of rum and coke or whiskey or whatever in there, because he's just as bad as I am. You know, he had a gallon of vodka or a gallon of whiskey, and, you know, and so he'd bring me the food in there. And so I could get the energy to get up and eat. So I could get up and do something. And when I did pass out, he'd call the ambulance on me. And then they come out, and I go, well, I won't go, but then they kill me for it. Sure. So, you know, and he, you know, and then his check that he wrote for his part of the rent bounced, so I was homeless again. And so my Uncle Angel and my brother Kurt go, well, Diane, why don't you go stay over here? This place is pretty nice. And well, I think I jumped ahead of myself again. While I was on that 3-week run, I did just, for some reason I asked this woman, and I don't know why I asked for this woman, I didn't know her very well. I've known her husband since I was like 3. And so my brother Kurt called this person up and says, Diane's asking for you. She came over, she tried to detox me all night long at her house, right, vomited in a bucket. And she brought me home the next day and said, eat something, Diane, and I'll be back in a little while and we'll put you, try to get you into inpatient program. Well, she came back. I was drunk. But I was on the phone trying to call some place to get in. And I even called my insurance company and my old counselor. And between my old counselor and this friend, they got me into New Visions. So I was into New Visions for 4 days to detox. And when I got out of there, my insurance contacted this counselor for me. And this counselor, I made an appointment with him on Tuesday, the Tuesday I got out. So I met with him that morning, and he told me about the Tuesday night women's group. And I went to that Tuesday night women's group. I was sitting on the back of my car, smoking my cigarette. I got there early because I'm always early. Except for tonight, by the way. I was a couple of friends drove me. I'm sitting on the back of this car, and I'm, you know, smoking this cigarette, and I'm still shaking from the DP, and this woman pulls up in her little car and gives me this big old hug, and I thought she was a greeter, you know. And, you know, and I felt very welcome. I felt very nice, you know, comfortable and safe. And, you know, and like I said, my brother's check bounced and ended up moving to Fairport in Tulare. I don't know if you guys know where that's at. They said, oh, Diane, it's cheap rent, you can afford it. And I go, there's any bugs and cockroaches, I'm not moving. Oh, no, no, they don't have that. They lie. I got into this little trailer, and I called it 7 days of hell. I was in there, and the only thing I did do there was sleep. I did not shower, I did not eat, I did not do anything. I went over to my family's house and took a shower there. Because you step in the shower, you step on a cockroach. You know what I mean? And I was working at Walmart, and I was working the late shift, and I come home, and this mouse jumped out of the over my head, across the bed. So I go back to my group, and I say, I'm going to get drunk. If I don't get the hell out of here, I am going to get drunk. There's just no it's a bit about it. I'm going to get drunk. Because I do not like bugs. I do not like mice or anything. And one of the girls that was in my group, she goes, and the camera, I think, has something to do with it, too. But she goes, Diane, why don't you come? And actually, there were two women that offered this. One said I could come to her and her husband, but I didn't think that would be, I don't feel comfortable doing that. And this other gal, she had just left her husband, so she goes, Diane, why don't you come stay with me? So I went from this trailer park, whatever you want to call it, into this beautiful condo. And this was a new experience for me because I've never walked into somebody's house and just seen money laying all around the floor. Because and where I come from, you don't leave money laying around. Now this woman had $100 bills laying here and there and everywhere. And she turned out to be one of my dearest friends. We were roommates for almost 2 years. She ended up, after a year, got back with her husband. I got my own place. And then she left him again and moved in with me, and then that was too small, so we got another place. And, you know, and then she decided she wanted to buy a house in Hanford, and she got her house in Hanford. But, you know, and then I'm driving down, I'm trying to find a place that I can afford, you know, on my little Walmart budget. And I'm driving down, and there's this little apartment down the street, and, you know, and it's an amazing, it was a god thing. I got this little apartment for $450, no bugs, no cockroaches, 2 bedrooms, carpet, you know, and a fireplace. You know, and this is God doing this for me because I'm not good at nothing except for being sober. And, you know, and one of the things that my sponsor, my very first sponsor said, because I'm really jumping around here, she told me that when I asked her to be my sponsor, she said, you have to meet with her once a week, go to 4 meetings a week, and at this time I'm going to three outpatient groups a week, plus meeting with my counselor once a week, and she wants me to do these 4 meetings, and plus I'm working. And I go, I don't know if I can do it. You know, and she pointed out, you know, if you can you find time to drink, you can do it. And so, you know, I did. I made 4 meetings a week. I met with my sponsor once a week. I met with my counselor on his scheduled time. And, you know, I do that on a regular basis. I still go to 3 meetings a week. I still meet with a sponsor. I don't have the same sponsor I had at the beginning. I ended up getting a second sponsor, and he was out of town. Because I want a sponsor that works the steps. I want a sponsor that does what she said she's doing, not just sitting there and talking. You know, I want to see her in action. And so I got this sponsor, and she's living out of town, and she was very good. She taught me a lot of things. And but it was an out-of-town sponsor. I needed somebody a little closer, so I ended up getting one here in town, but it didn't work out. I tried her out for a year. It just didn't work for me. So I ended up getting this gal in Porterville, Susan, and she was my sponsor for like 5 years. She got me into, she didn't get me into it. I actually became a GSR. And I met her basically there, and she was a treasurer there. And so she became a sponsor for the last 5 years. And one of the things that I've learned in this program, I gotta say, is I've been sober 11 years, and not one day of that have I not been in service doing something in my sobriety. I don't care if it's, cleaning coffee pots or doing GSR. Right now I'm a literature person. I do whatever it takes to stay sober today because that's what I did to stay drunk. I did whatever it takes to stay drunk. And by working the steps and doing what suggestions by my sponsors, I'm able to stay sober. And I'm jumping around again, I see. But, one of the things, I think what the point is I'm trying to get today, these promises that are up here, they do come true. The promises have worked in my life on a daily basis because the other year she knows me, and it's awesome to see you. And, today, tomorrow actually, I'm closing on a house. I'm able to buy my own house now. I'm able to have a job that I absolutely love. After I left Walmart, I got on at Cigna, and I was working there, and I was there for 5 years. And if anybody's ever worked there, they know it's very stressful. And I wouldn't quit. I would not quit. The money was just really good. I would not quit. And God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. He fired me. And I was off work for a year. I had to move on a planet, lived off some of my retirement, that's what I did for a year. And I was in a lot of service work where I was doing the footwork, looking for work. I was also on the call list for the women out of the central office. So I would do whatever it takes to stay sober and not get drunk. So whatever anybody says, you don't drink. You don't have to drink. And I think with that, I'll shut up.